This is Talk is Cheap. I'm your host, DJ Susti, on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks, Independent Community Radio. All right, so Metro Cinemas and Circle Films presented Theaters of War, a movie on how the movie industry collaborates with the military-industrial complex to make sure that the military looks good in all the movies, to an alarming extent. So that's in Circle Films, Theaters of War. And in the Q&A, we had Norman Solomon, who is a media analyst, very well-respected media guru among us media circles. Yeah, that's coming up. Norman Solomon for about 20 minutes, talking about his new book on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks, Independent Community Radio. All right, real quick, before we get to Norman Solomon, I just want to talk about, I advocate appropriate technology here, and of course we should always be conserving energy and conserving resources as much as possible and be within the Earth's cycles. So I just wanted to, this is kind of an addendum to last week's show on what a hypocrite I am and for running up a huge carbon footprint, but it's, you know, you don't have much choice out there. To me, cars, we're not saying, and this is just it, we're not, people turn these things into extreme positions. Someday, it would be great, like there's a book called Ecotopia where there's no new cars. You know, Cuba stopped cars from being built in Cuba or even imported. And in the fiction book Ecotopia, they start pulling cars out of the rivers and stuff to and lakes to restore them. We don't need any more new cars. Cars, you know, you still use them for running errands, but you use it. The problem is people commute in cars, and it requires a huge infrastructure, wasteful infrastructure, rather than using mass transit to commute. So yeah, someday there would be no cars at all, hopefully, and we'd have walkable cities. You know, I just want to make sure we say rooftop solar, rooftop solar, rooftop solar. We're not advocating centralized power anymore. You don't need, we can all produce our own power almost anywhere in the world. There's no reason to have a centralized power source that we have to pay someone to run a wire to your house. So these are examples of things that get twisted in the media that are simple solutions that get twisted in the media. You know, we're saying eventually there would be no police. I was reporting on this that there's a group of policemen and judges who'd like to make drugs legal because they waste so much time and money chasing after drug addicts that are is basically a medical problem. So, and then all of a sudden, people are saying that we want to get rid of all the police. Yes, eventually, I think we could have a society with no police. Social programs have proven to prevent crime. You know, we need social welfare, however you want to do that social welfare. It seems to me like it'd be great to pool all our money together. We would get cheaper rates, you know, just like a co-op. If we pooled all our money together for social welfare, but whatever, some way has to be, if we spend that money on social welfare, it's much more efficient than a punitive system of locking everybody up. And could you just leave some of the forest, please? We're just saying, please, you know, could you leave some untouched areas? You know, what the anarchists are making me realize is I just read Gone to Croatoan, and I'm in the middle of The Many-Headed Hydra. Whether you believe in capitalism or not, you don't have a right to, and even if it's the greatest system in the world, you don't have a right to stop people from any other system, like hunter-gatherer, if people still want to be able to go out in the forest and live and forage and not, and shun a capitalist system, they should be able to do that. So the capitalists and the corporatists are making it so that there is no other choice but to be a slave in the Satanic Mills. Another issue that got twisted in the media. If you want to have a tank of propane delivered to your house or methane delivered to your house, you are more than welcome to do that. Nobody's going to stop you from, if you really want to use a gas stove, you can do that. But we don't want our tax dollars paying for gas infrastructure to your house. I'm sorry, we're not going to pay that for that anymore. But you're welcome to, it's going to cost you a lot of money, but if you want to burn a gas stove or a gas barbecue, if it's that important to your cooking methods, you can do that. We're just not going to run pipes underground at taxpayer expense and ratepayer expense. Trucks, theoretically, until something else comes along, they're an efficient use of energy. They're sustainable. And I just want to say, but I've advocated we should have had diesel. We've had diesel electric trains for years. We should have had diesel electric trucks long ago, and then finally switch over to electric trucks. If the motor is in the wheel, stay as local as possible. What else? War. Every time something happens in the world, the response does not have to be selling weapons to a neighbor country. That doesn't have to be. There can be humanitarian aid, and the aid may involve, it will probably involve some debt forgiveness. So that money that ends up spent on weapons, that is this cycle of money that stays in the hands of weapons contractors and their shareholders. Instead, that money could be spread over a lot of people with debt forgiveness and land reform and diplomacy instead of always turning to war. All right, so coming up, Norman Solomon at the Encircle Films presentation of Theaters of War. Norman Solomon coming up here on KPW LP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peace Works Independent Community Radio. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends. Support independent media.
It's Mariko Plesha, and I work at Community Alliance of Lane County, known to you, many of you maybe, as KELC. Founded in 1966, KELC has been speaking truth to power ever since. Our mission is to educate and organize for human dignity, racial, social, and economic justice, and peace. Thank you so much to Encircle Films for bringing this film to our community and for inviting us to co-sponsor the film as part of our Reimagining National Security initiative, which dialogues with so many of the topics brought forth in this film. The film made me think about the veterans in our community who are unhoused, who are facing addiction without the services they need. To many of our neighbors who have come crossing the border, the militarized border, or seeking asylum from countries where our military has made their country unlivable. I invite you to check out KELC's webpage and check out our programs, because one of the main things that the film really made me think about was actually, why is the Department of Defense and the CIA going to these lengths? Well, it's because when the community doesn't listen to the narrative that serves power, we have a lot of power. And so that's what our programs are seeking to do, to bring out community discussion and educate and organize. So thanks so much, Encircle Films.
Thank you. You can have no less.
Hi, I'm Chico Schwal. Some of you know me. I'm the treasurer of Eugene Peace Works, which is an organization that has existed here since 1981. And I brought notes because I forgot everything watching that movie. I want to thank you all for taking an interest in this topic and for showing up. And maybe, how about a few clapping hands for 10 years of Encircle Films? many of you know, Eugene Peace Works is a grassroots organization working for peace, justice, and on media issues. It began as a 501c3 in 1981 with a focus on anti-nuclear issues. Our strengths include our collaboration with other community organizations. So CALC and EPW are partial sponsors with Encircle Films of tonight's presentation because we all thought it was a good idea. 7 years ago, unable to make much of a dent in the existing media, we decided to become the media and started a radio station, KEPW, which is a locally controlled, membership-supported, low-wattage radio station right here in Eugene. There are two great ways you could learn more about not only Eugene Peace Works, but KEPW Radio. One is right up at the back of the room. Dee has an information table, and you can pick up some stuff to read, or you can ask him questions. He's been heavily involved with KEPW since its very beginning. And the other way is, you can go to kepw.org, hit the Listen Now button and listen to whatever's on the air, hit another button and get the entire schedule of what we do, profiles of the people who are working there, some of the community projects and youth projects that we're working on now, which continue to change and evolve. It's pretty exciting. If you want to learn more about KEPW, just go to kepw.org, which you can do even if you're out of the listening radius. You can be in Bangkok and just like bring it up on your computer and listen. We hope to get to know you better, and we hope you have an interest as well. Thank you very much.
All right, so you've been listening to our two sponsors, and you can go to our webpage, and their sponsorship is there, and they're linked directly. You can click on their logos and go direct to their organizations to get information that way, trying to keep that cross-pollination going on. We have Norman Solomon up on screen, and Norman, I hope you can hear us, and we've hopefully been tuned in so that you can talk with us about what your thoughts on the film and respond to some questions from our audience. Norman, can you give me a sign that you can hear us?
Norman.
All right, fantastic. Well, welcome. Any opening comments from you before we start into a question and answer?
Well, I think it's so important that there are institutions that can counter the kind of media messaging that you just saw on the screen, where the Theaters of War as a film really flips over the rocks and helps us to understand what the ingredients are of this toxic, you might say, warlock's brew that comes out of mass entertainment, corporate America, and the United States. And it's very much in sync with the kind of news that we get every day, overwhelmingly. So it's so important to support KEPW, to support Encircle Films, to day in and day out give some sustenance and nurturance psychologically, financially, in terms of your time, because we need our grassroots institutions. So I'd sort of leave it at that, and glad to be able to be part of this event this evening.
Fantastic. So let's open it up.
Hi, my name is Michael Kerrigan. Great movie. Really appreciate that. How can we influence our congressional delegation to do more to what you highlight in this movie, the military industrial complex? What can we do with our congressional delegation to put a stop to this? Thank you.
Yeah, great question. Well, of course, you and the country have lost Congressman DeFazio, yeah. And he was certainly one of the best. Even then, he needed pressure from the grassroots to counter the pressure that comes from the 700 lobbyists on Capitol Hill at any one time for military contractors and all the other pressure coming down from the media political establishment. So I would say, to be very blunt, because literally and figuratively, looking at where the world is now, time is short. We don't have a lot of time to beat around the bush. The senators, including the two from Oregon, are overwhelmingly part of the military-industrial complex. There is no question about that. If you look at even the best, someone like, let me just give an example, Merkley.
Yeah.
They're still marching in step with a set of policies that are bringing us closer to nuclear war, confrontation with Russia, and unwillingness to speak out against a president of his own party. Now, I know that some people in this audience were lucky enough to, in real time, hear Senator Wayne Morse. Morse had a set of courageous qualities that are completely lacking from the U.S. Senate today. So in more direct answer to your question, we need to raise hell, nonviolently, refusing to engage in any sort of violence whatsoever, but also refusing to defer to and enable people in power, whether it's your member of the House, your two Senate members, and so forth. Martin Luther King referred to what he called the marvelous new militancy of nonviolence. And we're not getting nearly enough of the marvelous nonviolent militancy that we need. We got to organize as though our lives depend on it, because they do.
Thank you, Norman. I videoed your talk here at the University of Oregon a couple of years ago, and so I want to ask your opinion. Is it efficacious in moving public opinion to video important speakers when they come through town, and how we can promote that? And also, along with creating video and recording things that happen, including demonstrations, is it efficacious to have video events like this, which is once a month? And also, I want to mention and give credit to Wallingford Meaningful Movies, which is a large network of monthly videos up in the Seattle area you're probably aware of. So alongside these two tactics, what would be your bottom line best tactic for moving, for changing public, the culture of our country?
Yeah. Well, it's a great question, and it does come up. What is the one thing that's most important for us to be doing? And my answer really is there is no one thing. It's like, what's the one thing we need for a healthy forest? You know, it's just not there. When you think about a healthy ecology, it requires so many different aspects, all very much engaged and present. And that's, I think, true of social movements. So whether it's a video, film production, writing books, articles, newspapers, independent radio stations, political organizing, you have the examples of CALP, Eugene Peaceworks, there are groups and activists all over the country engaged in trying to create a nonviolent and emphatic culture of resistance, which is so needed. So I think that whatever people's passions are and talents and skills are, keep the shoulders to the wheel, encourage others to do that. And also, as has sometimes been referred to as negating the negation, we do need to be highly critical, not euphemistic and direct, about the media terrain. And if you look at a paper like The Oregonian, look at a paper like The New York Times, sure, there are exceptional instances of articles that run counter to the militaristic strain, what Martin Luther King called the madness of militarism. But the essence of propaganda is repetition. The exception is better than nothing, but that's not what propaganda is about. And so if you look, for instance, at the radio terrain, you have several million people in this country, including probably hundreds of thousands in the state of Oregon, who are listening to NPR News every day. They're listening to All Things Considered in Morning Edition, and they, through the process of water on the stone, come to believe that they're getting a accurate, balanced, wide-ranging view of the world because they're talked to in complete sentences and the news report might last all of 10 minutes. And when we've had wars such as the Gulf War in 91, the invasion of Iraq, the attacks on Afghanistan, the bombing of Libya, NPR stands for National Pentagon Radio. That's just a reality. So I urge people in this instance, stop giving your money to KLCC. Give your money to a station like KEPW. If you lived in Lenape Valley, farther north, you might give money to KBOO. It's not only money, but that's part of it. But it's energy, and it's also having a critical sensibility and sharing other outlets. I encourage people, read the New York Times, listen to All Things Considered in Morning Edition, but also listen to Democracy Now. Also go to websites like Common Dreams or Truthout, and then make your own decision. But we're getting right now from the mass media is kind of a monoculture, monocrop. It's extremely unhealthy. It is part of the military-industrial complex tacitly in terms of how it actually reports. And it's not just what they do report, it's what they refuse to report. It's the silences that are so powerful in terms of propaganda.
Question?
Question.
Thank you to Encircle Films for, again, a great film showing, and to CALP and to KEPW. We've got three of the best organizations in our community here tonight. And Mr. Solomon, thank you for all of your life's work, and especially for what you just said about NPR. You know, watching this film, which was essential and it's great, but I also just started having questions about how insidious other industries may be in. Like, law enforcement. You see, you watch a movie and it'll just make cops look so great. And it's the law enforcement industry also in the entertainment industry. Is fossil fuel somehow, you know, are they worked into movies? I don't know. And I'm just wondering, it seems like our whole culture is based on this kind of insidious propaganda and advertising. Call it capitalism, I guess. Thank you.
Sure, thank you. Listening to your comment and your question, I tried to think, hey, in this political system, in what is called the neoliberal economic system, what major institution is not in cities? I mean, I'm just trying to think. You know, you mentioned law enforcement, the military-industrial complex, the prison complex, the pharmaceutical industry, the healthcare conglomerates, so-called law enforcement, the judicial system. If you have more money to hire a lawyer, you've got much better chance of defending yourself, to put it mildly. Not a lot of rich people in prison. Some rob you, as Woody Guthrie said, with a six-gun, some with a fountain pen. Now some rob us with a computer terminal or price fixing. There's, of course, many people dying behind this system every day. And so when we look at phenomena like insidious dynamics, I think it's a very useful word, because it's like the proverb of the fish in water. We've been brought up in it, we're in it. We might think, what water? It seems so natural. The rampant, voracious capitalism that is so humongous now is just all around us. So it's not to be fatalistic, it's to be realistic, and then say, if we're going to change what is, we have to strive with ourselves and each other to create a more educational, informative environment, so we realize what we're up against, and then we can be more, I think, realistic and effective about how to push back in a way that can make a difference.
Questions? Hand up.
Thank you for everything you do, Norman.
Thank you.
Wayne Martin from Monterey. I used to go down and hear you and follow you there, and it's still good to see you from time to time at the Monterey Institute of international studies. I wanted to make a comment about a film I saw probably 10 years ago. Everybody may know this film back in the day, The Hurt Locker. It won an Academy Award. It was about Army Explosive Ordnance Disposal, EOD, officers and technicians, and how they would handle very dangerous situations. I was a member of the Navy Explosive Ordnance Disposal Units. I didn't know that I wanted to see that film. For a long time I didn't. And finally I went, and it was just utterly deceptive. From start to finish, nothing in that film could be believed. At the end, you may remember, the hero of the film walks all the way down to a live piece of ordnance and then takes care of it and walks back. It's so dramatic, overly dramatic. No one ever in the explosive ordnance disposal industry would ever go anywhere alone. It just is never done. It's a hugely important misconception in order to create heroes that basically don't ever do what that movie says they do. Thanks.
Thank you. The notion of heroes and what is heroic is, of course, imbued in our society and news and entertainment, mass entertainment. I mean, our heroes are, we are told, people like Bill Gates and others who become gazillionaires. I mean, I understand there's an athletic shoemaker who's had a little bit of impact on the University of Oregon, for instance. They're supposed to be our heroes because they have billions of dollars and get the names of their relatives on buildings in the process. And this is the sort of adulation, sort of like what Deng Xiaoping said when China made a turn, it's glorious to be rich. At least he was being honest about an ideology that is an ideology in the society. In terms of films, I just finished a book called War Made Invisible that'll be out next month. And in there, I wrote about a pair of films. One is the film American Sniper, which a hell of a lot of people saw. And when the New York Times published at the end of the last decade a list of what the film critics, including A.O. Scott, considered to be the most influential films of the 2010s, of the entire decade, they put at the very top of the list American Sniper. And when I consider what that film is, it's a boilerplate paradigm, not only making a hero out of someone who set a record for the number of Iraqi people he killed as a sniper, but it's also a sort of a boilerplate template for almost in three acts. You may remember, if you're old enough or or subjected yourself to it, the film that John Wayne starred in during the Vietnam War called The Green Berets. Anybody remember that? And actually, although the American Sniper, which was directed by Clint Eastwood, had far better sophisticated production values and was, quote-unquote, a much better film, they're really very similar because they have people in there trying to do the job in the military, which is to go and kill people of color far away who Washington officials have decided need to be killed. Okay, that's one act. Then you have a skeptic. In the case of the Green Berets film, a sort of long-haired reporter who has doubts about the wisdom of the Vietnam War. And in the case of American Sniper, it's the hero's wife. And then the third and final act, both the reporter and the wife realize that these are really righteous wars, and we should totally support the war efforts. That's pretty standard, and it's very difficult, but not impossible, to produce an entertainment film for mass distribution that really challenges that sort of mentality. The one that comes to mind, maybe arguably the only admirable film that Tom Cruise was ever in, was Born on the 4th of July, which is a terrific film.
Is it me?
I can't help but, this reminds me of the liquor ads and the cigarette ads on the backs of magazines and on TV. Isn't this a form of predatory advertising, and is that a legal avenue? Is there a corollary between that type of advertising? Is there a legal avenue that we could use, you know, to say that this is predatory, teaching, giving examples, you know, to teach children to go become cannon fodder, similar to teaching them to smoke cigarettes and drink alcohol?
Well, that's a good point, and the cigarette and liquor industries certainly would qualify for the additive that we were talking about a few minutes ago, Insidious. For that matter, of course, the fossil fuel industry and threatening the future of the next generations, denying and lying about climate. I think you make a very good point. And it goes to how corrupted and corroded our society is, that your point is really off of the mass media radar. It's as unacceptable to even explore in depth as, for instance, could we have a single standard of human rights, single standard of international law, and a single standard of war crimes and being a war criminal? You know, if we had a open discourse and something close to journalism that did function without fear or favor in the United States, then there would be some discussion in the U.S. mass media about not only whether Vladimir Putin is a war criminal, which I think he is, but also whether George W. Bush is a war criminal, which I think he is. And in my book, War Made Invisible, I talk about how George W. Bush has been rehabilitated in the media. Not that he ever got the kind of coverage he deserved, but in recent years, you may remember that Ellen DeGeneres made a point on her television show of showing a film of her hanging out with George W. Bush and saying how she didn't have to agree with him to really be friends with him and see him as a really fine person. And then Michelle Obama, who you may remember, was widely praised as quote unquote first lady. Michelle Obama has gone way out of her way to praise and publicly hang out with George W. Bush. And she says, you know, we disagree on some policies, but we share the same values. So it's okay to lie ourselves into a war and cause several thousand U.S. deaths and hundreds of thousands of Iraqi deaths. That's okay, because we all have the same values. So that's the message coming from liberal Democrats and in Congress and in power. And you may remember that when Dick Cheney went to the floor of the House about 17 months ago in January of 2022, he went to the floor of the House, and he was greeted by one Democrat after another. I'm not just talking backbenchers. I'm talking Nancy Pelosi and others. And they went up to shake his hand, and they said, "We're so proud and honored that Dick Cheney is on the floor of the House with us today." So this is something I've been working on and writing about lately, and is really the core of the book, is if we say it is all forgive and forget, and we can just put all that behind us, then what we're really saying is those who were slaughtered based on lies didn't really matter after all. And that's prefigurative for the next war and the next war.
Norman, you've introduced your upcoming book, War Made Invisible. Can you give us a little bit of information about how and when it'll be available, how interested nonprofits might engage with it, and I think I heard a rumor that they might be making a documentary about your book. Is that true?
Yeah, I'm glad to confirm that rumor. The Woman Invisible film should be out about a year from now. It's a full-length documentary in the works, and it's done, being worked on by the same people at the Media Education Foundation that produced and directed the film War Made Easy, which some folks may have seen here tonight, who they were the really brilliant filmmakers who took my War Made Easy book and adapted it into a film. And I'm glad to tell you that Roger Stahl, who created and directed and made the film you all saw tonight, is joining the effort to work on the War Made Invisible film. In the meantime, the book is coming out in a few weeks, and you can get it from a bookshop or order it from your bookstore, online, Barnes & Noble, or heaven forfend, Amazon, if you do want to. And it's a book that really, I think, goes to the question of, do we have any way of truly evaluating willingness to have a single standard of human rights? Or is this country, as I make a case for in the book, so morally corrupted, so descended into an Orwellian hole of doublethink and newspeak, that while we commiserate over the deaths of Ukrainians, as we should, we are essentially messaged that there are two tiers of grief. The tier of grief is for human beings that really matter, Americans or people who are killed by designated enemies of the US government, such as those in Ukraine. And then there's the other tier of grief, people who are slaughtered by US tax dollars through Pentagon firepower, and they don't really matter. Their grief is absolutely insignificant. And so a point of the book is that we are living that reality all the time. That's the messaging through silence and through overt messages through our mass media. And we can't find anybody in Congress even to speak out against it, and it's almost never raised in those terms in mass media. So we have a political and media culture in the United States that holds certain lives to be precious and certain lives to be essentially worthless. It's not a fatalistic book. It's a way of saying, let's get real so we can change it.
Do we have any other? Oh, we have, thank you, Phil.
I am just humbled by your words, and thank you so much for the film, and thank you, Uncircle Films. And coming from a suburban, white, middle-class town in Illinois, and having jets flying over my head as a little girl constantly, my dad was always on the road and seeing my cat shot by a neighbor. It's so much trauma. And how do we get this changed? How do we, when people are being shot, just going to the wrong house, being on a subway asking for some help, how do we get the young, these innocent children who are going to be corrupted by our own, and it's just, there are no words, but thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, and I think your word trauma is very appropriate. There are various facets of trauma, of course, people in war zones the most, but to live in this culture, and we were talking earlier about police, there's the Pentagon 1033 program I write about in the book, where the Pentagon ships its tanks and weapons to police, gives them to police around the country, and more when there are demonstrations, as in Black Lives Matter, protesters have faced off against essentially Pentagon weaponry that is provided to the police forces. I'm all for gun control, and I support the outcry to have gun control in our country. What appalls me is there's no talk about gun control at the Pentagon.
Yeah.
And that the children killed in schools in this country are grieved over in this country, as they should be. And the children who are killed by the Pentagon weaponry, engaged in wars that we hear, really hear now and know nothing about, they're simply non-persons. You mentioned white and matters of race, and it dawned on me partway through working on this book that in 20 plus years of the so-called war on terror, I couldn't think of anybody killed by U.S. war efforts who wasn't a person of color. And you talk about something hidden in plain sight. There it is. We know full well, and liberal outlets, NPR, will acknowledge that we have institutional racism, we have systemic racism in the United States, and yet we're supposed to believe that, oh, that has no effect on U.S. policy overseas. I'm not saying the U.S. has been bombing countries because it's inhabited by people of color, but I am saying that because those countries are inhabited by people of color, it's easier politically and in the media to bomb and keep bombing them. Yes. And I should mention that Encircle Films on its website has some information about the War Made Invisible film, including some very deep discounts that we are making available to progressive groups. So that's one more reason to go to the Encircle Films website, among many reasons.
Just a 30-second question. How can we stand up a media criticism group in a small town like Eugene, where all of our daily media is owned by national chains? Our daily newspaper, the Register Guard, is owned by Gannett. And we have two major television broadcasters, which are Sinclair, KVAL, and Allen Media, the KEZI. And as you mentioned in your earlier comments, you know, there is a sort of a mainstream narrative, and that is what is published here. So is it successful? Is it a promising tactic to try to...
Yeah, I think that's a key point. And by the way, when I lived in Eugene many years ago, I remember the Register Guard was owned, I believe, by a family. And so this is typical of what's happened around the country. Gannett, with the accent on net, Gannett is just swallowed up so many newspapers, and other conglomerates have as well. I think it's a very valuable use of time. Have a name of a group that is going to monitor and challenge media. And it's surprising sometimes how much impact you can make. We are accustomed to the idea, if there's a polluting factory, we set up a picket line. If there is a racist coming to campus, overt racist, we set up a picket line. But we're encouraged to believe that there's something wrong with setting up a picket line at the TV station or the newspaper because somehow we're against First Amendment. No, we're not against the First Amendment. We want to get these corporate giants off the windpipe of the First Amendment so more people can be heard. And it's not just a top-down elitist priority in terms of who has access to news media in the first place. So I think it's a great possibility to have a local or regional or statewide media watch organization. And, you know, it's a Gandhian thing. You analyze, you see what's wrong with their coverage, what isn't on their op-ed pages, the imbalance. You go to them with the data, you ask them to change. If they don't change, you escalate nonviolently but emphatically. And they will not want to see, you know, I think 10 people picketing the local daily or a TV station and doing it emphatically and nonviolently and articulately can make a really big difference. And you also can have some effect by drawing on the research ongoing and the articles from the terrific organization FAIR, Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting. If you're not on the FAIR email list, I encourage you to go to FAIR.org and sign up, and you get tremendous research, analysis. And it's not just national and international news, because you're also getting analysis of some syndicated columnists who may well be in the Oregonian or the Register Guard. And you're also sometimes going to get analysis of what isn't on the PBS NewsHour, what isn't on All Things Considered, a morning edition. Now, KLCC should be held accountable. If they're simply serving as a conveyor belt to regurgitate, so to speak, what they're getting every day from All Things Considered in Morning Edition, the pretense is, oh, we're giving you great journalism. But FAIR has done studies about ATC and Morning Edition, showing data quite to the contrary. I've rarely seen more smug editors and journalists and station managers than around the country, ones that are running NPR affiliates. To hear that closed universe tell it, they're just great. Problem, particularly on foreign policy, is that they pretty much accept the prerogatives of the U.S. government to work its will on the world, to militarily intervene, and then they have arguments about how to intervene and where to intervene, which is hardly wide-ranging discourse.
Norman, we need to bring this to a close. We have one more. Okay, one more question, and then we're going to need to bring it to a close. This has been fantastic.
Hi, my name is Issa.
Hi, my name's Lena. And thank you for the valuable information. I really appreciate it. This is not quite the mass media, but I'm curious if anyone's looked into any Pentagon CIA involvement in things like the video games, the interactive video war games that a lot of teenagers, young people play. I know that a lot of white supremacist groups infiltrate those starting in like junior high age, but if they're looking at propaganda or recruitment, if that's something. The other question, I have a friend who is in the military career and has been stationed overseas quite a bit, and he says, like, for the rank and file, there's a steady playing of Fox News, and that's their steady diet of information. So I'm just curious what the military does with that, or if they're involved in that, if they're looking at propaganda and recruitment in different areas.
Yeah, thanks. There's been a practice where if occasionally a story is going to be in a magazine that might be negative towards smoking or drinking, the advertisers for tobacco or alcohol are warned ahead of time to keep that ad away from in the magazine, in that issue. And I think it's sort of relevant to what you're saying, that there's a synergy that's going on continually between the kind of content that goes out through media outlets, whether Fox or CNN and so forth, or the video games, and the overall environment, such as the one that this film portrays, in terms of what we don't even usually considered to be political or content. It's entertainment and so forth, you know, an officer and a gentleman or whatever, how great it is, you know, to be in the military. And I think that in terms of video games and so forth, it goes to the point that this is about money. This is about mega profits. This is about billionaires who are getting more wealthy and investors and corporations. So whether it's a video game or whatever else, if it is in sync with and in harmony with, blends into the woodwork with the overall political media environment, then the people who are running the show, they're really happy. In the 1960s, I'll sort of close with this thought. During the Vietnam War, there was a sardonic and angry saying, war is profitable, invest your son. And now with fewer troops with so-called boots on the ground, it's not war is profitable, invest your son or daughter per se. It is that the aerospace industry is making a killing, so to speak, with humongous profits. You know, Biden just signed and trumpeted how great this record-setting Pentagon budget is. And this is just humongous amounts of profits going on. And it's also great for the war type of video games and all the rest, the entertainment, interactive videos and so forth that are part of it. So just to sort of sum up, you know, of course this can be daunting. I quote Antonio Gramsci, pessimism of the intellect, optimism of the will. Things would be much worse if we didn't have activist groups going at it all the time, and we need to make those efforts stronger.
Thank you, Norman.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody.
And that'll conclude our evening with Norman Solomon and the Theaters of War film. Thank you very much for coming tonight, folks.
See you in the fall.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Thank you.